Shabbat shalom. American Jews are a mystery to me. I've been a rabbi for over 20 years and a student of American Judaism for a quarter of a century. And just, you know, every time I think I'm beginning to understand American Jews, something else happens that reminds me I don't know nothing. Take Passover, for example. Passover is by far the most popular of Jewish festivals. At least 80% of American Jews have a Seder or a semblance of a Seder or observe some kind of Passover ritual. More Jews observe Passover than Yom Kippur. Passover is so popular that even Christians are increasingly observing Passover. Churches across the country organize communal seders and home observance and read the Agada diligently. They've been known to have four-hour seders. But while it's good to know that the Christian world no longer believes that we bake matzah with the blood of their children, how gullible they are. I can take them to a bakery in Brooklyn. You know, I'm not really baffled by this Christian observance of Passover. Most of the Passover observing Christians are true believers. I'm interested in why so many non-observant Jews observe Passover. Do you know that we had over 130 people at our communal Seder this week, at the second Seder? It wasn't cheap either. If I could only figure out why non-observant, assimilating, on the way to checking out Jews observe Passover, perhaps there's a chance that I might discover a recipe for nourishing Jews who are starving Jewishly and keep them alive for another generation. If I can keep Jews alive for one more generation, if I know with high confidence that our first graders and our B'nai Mitzvah students will themselves raise Jewish children, and that I had something to do with that, Dayenu. That, for me, would be enough. I will have fulfilled my oath to God and to our people. Really, I mean that. When it's all over, when it's all said and done for me, that's what I want you to say about me. He kept some Jews alive for the next generation. I think about it all the time. Really, at practically every bar mitzvah, I look at this teenager and their parents and I ask myself, will there be Jews in this family in 20 years? Or are we simply the doormen escorting the Jews in the family out of the Jewish home? Now, I need some help here, you know, because you're the Jews. You know more about this than I do. What do you think? I mean, they're Jews who don't give a lick about kashrut. They eat any creepy, crawling, snorting, sea-crawling, swarming, blood-flowing, moving thing under the sun. And yet those very Jews observe strict Passover dietary laws. Why? What gives? And not only that, they'll observe the strictest of the strict Passover laws. For example, it's only the Ashkenazi rabbis who decreed that rice, corn, and beans are not kosher for Passover. They were afraid that these foods would be confused with restricted foods because they looked like the restricted foods. They looked like chametz. Rice, for example, being white, looked like leavened wheat. So in order to prevent eating leavened wheat, the forbidden food, and in order not to confuse any bystander that forbidden food is acceptable because he's eating it, Ashkenazi rabbis prohibited rice, corn, and beans as well, just in case. By But Sephardic rabbis, they said, come on, don't be ridiculous. Sephardic Jews eat rice. They eat corn. They eat beans. It's a much happier week in Sephardic homes, if you know what I mean. So we have American Jews who on every day of the year, except Passover, eat bacon and eggs for breakfast. But observe the Passover dietary laws in their strictest form. They might even continue to eat bacon and eggs for breakfast during Passover, but will forego the bread. During Passover, they might order pork bellies and lobster sauce from the local Chinese that can only stay in business because of the Jewish clientele. But in deference to the holiday, will insist that the order come without the rice. If there is rice in the delivery, they'll return it. Heaven forfend, rice will make the home unkosher. Pork, yes. Pork egg roll, not kosher for Passover. I know non-observant Jews who are concerned about whether their toothpaste is kosher for Passover. So as I said, I know nothing. But that never prevented any good rabbi from voicing his opinions. So I offer these thoughts for you. It's not only the food. Give us a good reason to eat and we'll come. It's not only the family. Give us a reason to see the mad uncle and the crazy cousins again and we'll come. And I think it's not only the message of Passover freedom, although this is an appealing message for us to learn and relearn every year. And that message is still important, perhaps more important than ever in our power crazy world. But I think, or at least would like to believe, that there's something even deeper. In the Torah portion for Shabbat of Passover, there is the following verse. And God said to Moses, you cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live. I think that no matter how advanced we become, no matter how technologically sophisticated, and no matter how philosophically rational we moderns are, still, we are the same as Moses. We haven't changed all that much. We want to see the face of God and live to tell the tale. We want to know that we're not alone. We want to believe that our existence is more than mere chemical coincidence and random choice. It's not only the message of freedom that is inherent in the Passover story. It is that God wants this freedom and that God cares about and hears the cries of the oppressed, and that God intervenes to release the captive. Passover gives us two central messages. We can be freedom fighters. We can empower ourselves to be agents of change for a better world, and also that we are part of a larger moral arc that is not random, but is built into the very structure of the universe. Most of the truly sensitive and sophisticated people of our world are not, in fact, atheists. The most brilliant scientists know too much about the vastness of the universe and the complexities of our own brains to be strict atheists. We know too much about how little we know to insist on certain. I'm not an atheist, said Einstein. The problem is too vast for our limited minds. We see the universe marvelously arranged and obeying certain laws, but only dimly understand these laws. Atheists, lamented Einstein, cannot hear the music of the spheres. I prefer the attitude of humility, to sense that behind everything that can be experienced, there is something that our minds cannot grasp, whose beauty and sublimity reaches us only indirectly. This is religiousness. And thus both the scientist and the poet can experience a sense of wonder at the rainbow. As Wordsworth wrote, "My heart leaps up when I behold a rainbow in the sky. So was it when my life began, so is it now that I am a man. So be it when I shall grow old, or let me die." The most talented musicians, the most sensitive poets, the most prolific scientists often have much more in common with each other than is commonly perceived. They perceive truth and beauty as interrelated. They are not contradictory, but complementary sentiments. As much as a math equation can be true, it can also be beautiful. As much as a Chopin ballade can be beautiful, it can also be true. Science can be poetical as long as the scientist preserves a sense of mystery and humility. In their most human and in their highest form, both science and poetry, both physics and music, are propelled by the same most basic human attribute, hope. Hope for ourselves, hope for our loved ones, and hope for the world. And so I would like to believe that there is also this sense of religiosity enveloping Passover, that there is an ineffable sense of mystery, of the miraculous, of the beautiful, and that there is both truth and beauty in the message of freedom. I would like to believe that the Passover story, the Haggadah, and its rituals are perceived in this vein by that massive swath of Jews who so regularly lack Jewish perception. That the believer and the skeptic, the observant and the non-observant Jew, perceive Passover as both beautiful and true. And that there is a kind of moral energy and moral imagination that reaches back into the past, but not only that. That there is a moral energy that expresses itself in the deepest of human passions, hope. Hope that longs for a better, a happier, and more peaceful world. And that in the end, that is why both the believers and the skeptics can gather around the Seder table and recite those words that are both beautiful and true to all. This is the bread of affliction, the poor bread that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat. Let all who want share in the hope of Passover. This year, we celebrate here. Next year, in the land of Israel. Today, we are still slaves. Next year, may we all be free.